On Monday, October 12th, the third in a series of Bozeman candidate forums was held via teleconference. The forum was sponsored by the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman Area, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Chapter, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library. It featured candidates for the Public Service Commission District 3 and the Gallatin County Commission seat that's open this year.
Good evening. My name is Sally Mason, and I'm the moderator for tonight's virtual candidate forum webinar. It's a difficult time, and it's hard to have these by Zoom, but I so appreciate you doing it, and I so appreciate the participants for showing up to learn about the candidates. I'm Sally Mason with the League of Women Voters, and I will be the moderator. Tonight's forum is sponsored by the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman Area, American Association of University Women, Bozeman and Belgrade Community Libraries. Then, thank you to our sponsors and to our planning team for your work in organizing this series. This virtual nonpartisan candidate forum series will be hosted for one more night after this, tomorrow, October 13th, where we'll talk about the ballot issues, so be sure to tune in. Tomorrow's ballot issues forum will run at the same time from 6:30 to 8:30, and public can sign on to view it using the same Zoom link you used tonight. Check the forum schedule on the Bozeman BPW Facebook page, where you'll also see the links of the recordings from previous evenings if you'd like to share or rewatch them. After tonight's forum is finished, the video recording of this webinar will also be posted to the Bozeman BPW Facebook page. Reminder that absentee ballots were mailed out last Friday, and you probably have gotten them. If you aren't registered to vote, you can still do so by visiting the Secretary of State website. Voter registration closes on October 26th. Ballots can be completed and turned in via email in person at a polling location or in person to the county courthouse on Election Day, November 3rd. On Election Day, November 3rd, same-day voter registration and in-person voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Now, the question rules. At some point, you'll be allowed to ask questions. Questions need to be questions, not diatribes. You can direct your question toward a particular candidate or to the whole group. For each question, regardless of who the question was initially directed to, each panelist will have an opportunity to speak to the question if they would like to. Now, in this case, since we have two different races, the PSC and the County Commission, we'll ask if everybody wants to answer it, but I assume it will come to one or the other. Note that I, as the moderator, will be reading the questions out loud and will direct them to the candidates. I'll also be incorporating questions that were pre-submitted via email. Once a question has been answered by all of the candidates, it will show up in the answered question tab. Please do not submit questions that have already been answered. So here's the agenda for tonight's forum. We'll have opening statements, 2 minutes by each of the candidates, followed by a prepared question for each of the candidate, and last, Q&A from the audience. After the public Q&A portion is finished, candidates will provide a closing statement, and I'll wrap up the forum and close the webinar by 8:30. So, let's welcome the candidates and get started. We have candidates running for Public Service Commission District 3. One is Tom Woods. Tom, you want to wave? And James Brown. James? And then for the Gallatin County Commission, we have Carter Atkinson. Carter, will you wave? And Zach.
Hey,
yeah. All right, Tom, nobody's going to forget your name. Good. Okay. So each one of you gets 2 minutes to introduce yourself, and we're going to start with Tom Woods for the PSC. 2 minutes, Tom.
Thank you, Sally. So again, my name is Tom Woods. I'm a state representative from House District 62, which is in Bozeman. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. Didn't really have a choice in that. And in fact, if I had that choice, Cleveland. But anyway, I moved to Montana in 1982. I had a job out here attending bar. Came out with a bunch of other guys in a van with $270 and that job. And since then, I've been a bartender, bellhop, and I worked my way up to personnel manager for a hotel company, and then I was a general manager for a hotel company, managing hotels, restaurants, RV parks. So I had over 300 employees and enjoyed what I did, but I wanted something a little bit different. And so my wife and I, in 1997, decamped to Bozeman, and I went back to school at Montana State University and got a degree to teach sciences. I teach molecular biology and physics at Montana State University. I also teach special ed in the public school systems when I can, but that's what I currently do. In 2012, I ran for an open seat in the Montana State Legislature, and I won. I've been representing Southeast Bozeman since, for 8 years now. And over that time, I have really loved the job. And if I could return to the House of Representatives, I think I would. But I'm termed out of the House of Representatives, and I'm running for an open seat on the Public Service Commission. As a state representative, I brought over a dozen bills that deal with energy regulation, which is what the Public Service Commission does. So that's why I'm running for the Public Service Commission. It's because it's a passion of mine. It's something I know about, and it's something that I really want to do for you.
Thank you. James Brown?
Thank you, Sally. I am James Brown, and I know what you're all thinking. And the answer is, yes, I do feel good. A little tip of the cap to James Brown there. Let me start by thanking the League of Women Voters of the Bozeman area, the Bozeman Public Library, the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the American Association of University Women, and the Belgrade Community Library for sponsoring this informative event tonight. Thank you for your efforts and for helping to educate the voters. I am a fourth-generation Montanan. My great-great-grandfather homesteaded in Beaverhead County in the 1880s. Believe it or not, he came out west at the age of 16 working on the railroad, and then started running freight from Corinne, Utah, into Bannock, Montana, our first territorial capital, and homesteaded. My cousins still have the ranch in Beaverhead County. I attended Beaverhead County High School, class of 1989. I received my undergrad degree from that other school across the mountains, who shall remain nameless in this venue. I received my law degree from Seattle University School of Law. I have a master's in tax law. I'm a small business owner. I have two offices. I have one in Helena and one located in Dillon. I employ four people. So I've signed both the front and back of a paycheck. I am an attorney by profession. Much of my legal experience has related to the work done by the PSC, so I'm very familiar with the body and how it works. I'm running because, as an attorney and as a ratepayer, I understand the PSC commissioners serve as neutral judges on issues that come before the commission. Our role is to call balls and strikes. It's a situation where we aren't picking winners and losers. There are an estimated 232,000 residents in this PSC district across 14 counties, and I'm running to represent each and every one of you. That's why I'm running for the PSC.
Perfect. Thank you. And now for the county commission, we'll start with Carter.
Where do I start? I'm 57 years old. I was raised in Dallas, Texas. I left Dallas, Texas when I was 20 years old. I moved to California, and there I pursued my education through Chapman University with a degree in liberal studies. With an emphasis in early childhood education, I was poising myself to be a teacher along with my wife, who is a teacher at Morningstar right up the street from our house. I went from the university and I started my own business. It was an entertainment business. It's quite interesting. I had a mobile rock climbing wall, sumo wrestling suits, trampoline thing. If you guys have ever been to a carnival, you strap the kids in, and baseball booths and a myriad of other things that I drug around the United States in and had kids participate. After that, I did construction. I rebuilt some homes. And years later, we came to Bozeman, Montana, roughly 8 years ago. My wife's from Montana, so we came up here to be next to her mom. And since I've been here, I've been a guide for Global Travel Alliance, which is an educational travel company here in Bozeman that takes eighth graders to D.C. for American Heritage Tours. Thank you. And I also work at Yellowstone Club as the private member guide for going to Yellowstone National Park. So I think that's about it. I'm running because I'm involved in the community. I see things, I see change that's happening, and I think I can be a part of it and make good decisions.
Okay, thank you, Carter. And Zach Brown?
You're welcome.
2 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you to League of Women Voters and the other sponsors, the Belgrade and Bozeman Public Library and all the others that James mentioned for having this forum tonight. My name is Zach Brown. I grew up here in the Gallatin Valley, went through, did all my schooling here from Hawthorne to Sacagawea to Bozeman High, went to college at the University of Montana and spent about 10 to 12 months in Washington, D.C., doing some research at Georgetown University and found my way home as quickly as I could. I've lived and worked here for about the past 7 years. I am a nonprofit professional and a three-term state legislator. I serve on the House Taxation, Natural Resources, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Committee. As a minority member, I'm currently chairing the Water Policy Interim Committee. And I've greatly enjoyed my participation in public service and representing, frankly, young people. My first campaign, I was 23 years old when I was filed and when I filed and 24 when I was elected. And I think bringing the perspective of a young professional who's at the beginning of my career, trying to find my way financially and otherwise into a life here in the Gallatin Valley is a unique perspective that's been important in the legislature. And I think it'll be informative as a member of the county commission as well. I believe that the number one issue facing us all, and I'll talk more about this later, is really planning for the future. I think the county government needs to be a better partner to all of us, to local governments, but the private sector and the nonprofit sector and others, in thinking about how to position ourselves as one of the fastest growing counties in the country. How do we want to better provide services? How do we want to deal with land use planning? And how can we generally make county government into a healthy and functional organization that serves all of us and manages our tax dollars wisely? Thank you.
Okay. And each office was asked to prepare a question, and we're going to go back the other way. We're going to start with Zach. And the question that was posed for the county commission candidates to prepare is the following. What current issue do you think is the most pressing matter for the county commission to take on? And what specifically would you propose to address the issue? And can we start with Zach?
Sure. I gave my preamble already, Sally, so thank you. I think planning for the future as a broad umbrella is the most important question facing county government. That means planning for land use decisions and future growth and development. That means planning for agriculture, water, irrigation infrastructure, for our natural infrastructure and ecosystem services, our rivers, our wetlands, our forested areas, the open spaces that have brought so many families to the Gallatin Valley over millennia, but particularly in the last 50 years. How can we do more proactive transportation planning that ultimately guides development rather than responding to it? How can we make our zoning policies and land use policy decisions more transparent and organized and forward-thinking. Currently, Gallatin County has close to 30 zoning districts with different administrative rules and different standards that guide growth and development questions. How can we consolidate and simplify that playing field so that the private sector and the rest of us all know where this community is headed? This is not a time for local government to react or prepare passively for the challenging questions that come with being one of the fastest growing counties in America. This is a time when we need to put our best resources and minds towards planning for a future that is ultimately livable, equitable, and creates a community that we're all proud to live in. My greatest hope, as aspirationally, with whether we're talking about the land use planning decisions or how we deal with the law and justice center and deployment of law enforcement and criminal justice systems and all those things, my overarching hope is that I can spend my time over the next 6 years creating a future that I'm proud to give to my nieces and nephews and my kids that aren't here yet. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Zach. And Carter, your 2 minutes.
Okay. You know, you get asked this quite often. I know Zach gets asked it also. What are the issues? Well, as I look into the issues, there are several issues that we need to address. The first and foremost is the growth. I mean, we're getting 2,000 people every year here in Gallatin County. It's just exponential growth. And half of those are in the city, half are in the county. Belgrade's doing 4.5% growth every year. They haven't lost a population since 2010. We have healthcare, mental health we need to take care of. We have education. We have a law and justice system we've been outgrowing that for a long time. That's going to need to be addressed. What I think is most important is the interfacing of the county commissioners with the city and with the other counties. We're annexing the triangle into the city right now, and it's making a huge difference. It won't be long till the city of Bozeman butts up with the city of Belgrade, and we will be neighbors. So we're neighbors right now, but there is a break. So I think we really need to practice on being transparent when we make subdivision plannings and decide together what can best be suited for our valley. The growth is bittersweet. It's really hard to throttle back on these developers and what they want to build and how they can make money here in our community. There are so many people that want to come to this valley because it's an amazing place to live. So we really need to stay on top of the state subdivision laws, the zoning laws, and pay attention to what the community wants, really lean into the community and get a voice on what they want. We've seen some mistakes in Gallatin County, Gallatin Canyon, Gallatin Gateway that I wouldn't like to see happen again. So I really think that we need to move closer to the community and get their voice. That's what I'll work on mostly. And well, there's several others, but I think my time's up. But thank you so much.
Thank you. And no two participants, if you want to begin submitting questions, that would be just fine.
Could you identify if they're for the PSC or the CEO?
Yes. Would you identify whether they're for the PSC or the county commission? And now we're going to hear the prepared question that was sent to the PSC. And we are going to start with James. And here's the question. What is the PSC? Why do we have it? And why do we continue to need it? James?
That is the question, isn't it? I'm sure Tom and I have heard this question many times in the last year as we've been running. What is the PSC? I think Tom and I both agree the PSC is probably one of the most underlooked agencies in state government. If you pay an investor-owned utility bill, you are impacted by the PSC and the regulatory work it performs. As I noted at the top of my comments, there are about 231,000 people living in the 14-county district that Tom and I are running in for this PSC seat number 3. And believe it or not, almost 218,000 of those are serviced by Northwestern, and about 13,800 are served by 5 co-ops. So you can see the importance that Northwestern Energy plays for you. The PSC also regulates natural gas, legacy telephones, water, sewer companies, regulates motor carriers and oversees natural gas, pipeline safety, and intrastate railroad safety. The commission is important to you and your family because you pay a power bill. The PSC is designed to make sure that you receive safe and reliable service while paying reasonable rates for those services. The PSC is not designed to be a legislative body. It's designed to be a regulatory body. Essentially, what the PSC commissioners do is we play the role of judges, as I noted, on cases that come before the PSC that we're supposed to serve as neutral parties in these matters and call balls and strikes as we see them. I think the importance of the commission is best summed up by the colossal mistake that was deregulation of the Montana Power Company in the late 1990s in Montana. Many of you who are listening tonight remember that. In the late 1990s, the PSC authorized the deregulation of Montana Power. This sent power bills going sky high and lost jobs and retirement savings for many. And that's the kind of thing that the PSC can play a role in, is making sure your power bills are fair and reasonable.
Okay, thank you. Tom, 2 minutes.
Thank you. I think Mr. Brown did a good job of explaining what the PSC does. It regulates monopolies. There are certain things that are needs and not wants that we want to have monopolies, or we have monopolies providing us services, such as broadband, cell phone.
Motor vehicle liability.
So transportation, but probably the most important one to folks in the district is energy production and distribution. And again, these are needs, they're not wants. So that's what the PSC does. So why do we need it? The Public Service Commission provides a balance between keeping a company like Northwestern Energy in business, their need to make a profit with what is a fair rate for consumers, those of us who pay the bills. And quite frankly, we need to do a better job of it, because we're not doing a very good job of it right now. I like graphs. I hope you like graphs too. But this is a graph of the profits of one of our monopolies, Northwestern Energy, over the last 7 years. And as you can see, it's increased every year over the last 6 and now 7 years. And yet your Public Service Commission granted a rate increase to this company. And when you look at the details of that rate increase, well, what you find is that you and I, those of us who pay residential rate, we got our rates raised by $20 million this year. Irrigators got their rates raised by about $3.5 million. Walmart and other large corporations got their rates cut by about $15 to $16 million. That's why we need to pay attention to the Public Service Commission.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. And this question is for the PSC candidates. Do you believe Northwest Energy should be allowed to pass along Colstrip O&M costs to ratepayers? And when you answer, will you say what O&M is?
In 90 seconds.
In 90 seconds. Who'd like to be first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
And that's kind of an easy one. No. We should not be responsible for paying operation and maintenance costs, O&M. And here's why. Back in 2008, Northwestern Energy paid $187 million for a 30% share of Colstrip 4. Now they're talking about buying another 25% share of Colstrip for $1. That plant needs tens of millions of dollars of repairs at this moment. And in the last legislature, they attempted to push it through the legislature to go around the Public Service Commission and buy this thing for a buck and pass $75 million onto ratepayers. It's not okay. This is not a good deal for ratepayers. Let me ask a simple question. If 30% of Colstrip was bought for $187 million, and your Public Service Commission granted a valuation of $407 million, which we're going to be paying until 2042. Is that okay? It is not okay. Any additional costs from Colstrip are not okay. Thank you.
James, 90 seconds. Same question.
Yeah, thank you, Sally. Again, let me reiterate that the role of the Public Service Commission is not to determine how Northwest Energy runs its business, nor is it the role of the Public Service Commissioner to think that he can run a utility, a regulated utility. The question becomes for the PSC and its commissioners is whether or not what the utility is trying to do is not only good for the utility, but also good for the ratepayer. As noted, PSC and the PSC commissioners serve as neutral parties, neutral judges on matters that come before the commission. So the question of whether O&M should be included in the rate base is really a question of what the case is before the commission. Now, Tom is commenting publicly right now on a matter that is going to probably come before the PSC, the newly constituted PSC in January of 2021. I think it's actually inappropriate for someone who is running for the PSC to comment on a matter that they could be ruling on in January of 2021, because we don't have all the facts before us today that we could have in January of 2021. Montana Supreme Court just chided the current commission in the Montana Sun case for making what's known as ex parte statements. Same. About cases. And that's what I think is going on here. We should not be taking positions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Question for the county commission candidates. How important is zoning and what do you think should be done? Who would like to answer that first?
I'll take a stab at it.
Okay.
Well, I think zoning is very important. I mean, we've seen a lot lately, and I mentioned earlier about Gallatin Gateway and Gallatin Canyon. Well, Gallatin Canyon had that billboard. And they don't have any zoning down there. Gallatin Gateway didn't have any zoning, and we see that big metal building that they put up, and a lot of people were mad about that. They didn't think it looked good, and they shouldn't have this billboard, and they shouldn't have this building. Well, they don't want zoning either. They don't want the billboard or the building, but they don't want zoning. But you have to have zoning if you want to have some continuity in the area. It seems that it's really difficult because people want zoning when it affects their neighbor, but they don't want zoning when it affects their property. So it's a really tough situation. But as we grow, we're going to have zoning. We're going to have to get the community together to see what they like and don't like and form a zoning, work with the zoning committees in the city and in the county to set this forward so we don't have to back up and look at our mistakes.
Hey, Zach?
Yeah, I think Carter said some things that I definitely agree with, that zoning is a challenging conversation because if it affects our neighbors in a way that affects our quality of life, human nature is to support it and think of it positively. And if it affects our freedoms, it's a negative conversation. And that's part of the human condition. That'll be part of every zoning decision and land use planning decision that no matter which of us is elected, we will face. And we'll have to reconcile that on a case-by-case basis. My hope is that I can bring again, kind of a future forward perspective as a young professional, someone who's lived here my whole life and thinking about how can we position this county to succeed in the future? Let's not make short-term incremental decisions about land use and community development. Let's create a vision and then that is decades in the future and work towards it. Not to say that many folks haven't had those types of conversations over the years, but by the fact that we have nearly 30 zoning districts in this county, all of which having different rules, administration procedures, and criteria and teeth or no teeth, et cetera. I think that shows that we haven't really had a lot of the tough conversations that we need to have as a community in terms of how do we want to grow and what do we want to look like in 40 years. So zoning, while it will be controversial and challenging on a case-by-case basis, is imperative for how we create a community that we all want to live in and pass on to the next generation.
Hey, this is for the PSC. It's quick. Do you both live in the PSC District 3?
I'll answer that one first because the allegation is being challenged against me. The answer, yes, my residence is in Beaverhead County.
Tom?
Definitely, I live here. My house is here. The house that I own is here. The car that I drive is registered here. My dog sleeps here. If I had a pilot's license, it would be registered to here. I have been registered to vote in this area for quite some time now. So, yeah, of course, I am a resident here. I question whether Mr. Brown has answered accurately.
Okay. This is another one for the PSC. As rising healthcare costs have taken an ever-increasing amount of personal income since the Affordable Care Act, and most healthcare options in Montana are effective monopolies, additionally, healthcare is being called a guaranteed right by some. Do you believe it would be prudent for the PSC to regulate the hospitals in Montana? Who would like to answer that first?
I'm happy to answer that.
Okay.
That's an easy answer for me because the decision is really not made by the PSC. That is a legislative decision. The PSC's mission is defined by the Montana legislature. The legislature decides what areas are regulated by the PSC. If the legislature decides that hospital costs and hospital operations need to be regulated by the PSC, that's their discretion to do so. If I'm serving on the PSC at the time that decision is made, then I will regulate hospitals as defined by the legislature. But that's really a legislative call.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you. It's actually, I brought a bill as a legislator to bring hospitals under the purview of the Public Service Commission. And the reason I brought that bill is I feel very strongly that hospitals do act as monopolies. You know, if I get hit by a bus on Highland Street, I don't get a choice as to what hospital I go get treated at. I don't have a choice about what course of treatment I get. And so I did bring a bill as a legislator to put hospitals under the purview of the legislature. And the way it worked was this, and I thought it was a pretty good bill. If the hospital charges twice of what Medicare would charge, you've got to justify that cost. So it wasn't so much price control, it was putting a ceiling over on hospital pricing, recognizing that they are monopolies. You charge twice of what my mother-in-law has to pay, you got to justify that. You got to come before a body, be it the Public Service Commission or another, and say why it costs that much. So like Mr. Brown, however, I agree that this is a decision that is made by the legislature, not the Public Service Commission. If the legislature decides that hospitals are, yeah, a monopoly and the PSC needs to provide regulation, I will happily do that.
Okay.
When they decide that.
And this is for the county commission. Do you believe lack of water will restrict county growth? And how should it be handled? Who would like to answer first?
Go Zach, because that's your expertise there, I think.
Okay. We're going to make it painful for everyone and have a nice guy contest because Carter and I had a beer a couple weeks ago, and I think we're both in this race for the right reasons. So for what that's worth. But yes, I think surface water supply is going to be a limiting factor in how Gallatin County grows. If Gallatin County is in a closed basin, which means there is no more legally available surface water. In fact, we were arguably over allocated in terms of how many water rights were given out in compared to how much water is available in our streams and rivers. So at some point in the near future, as our valley fills up, we will come to a crisis point or a decision point perhaps about how we meet future water supply. And the only two places regionally that say the city of Bozeman could go and buy new unclaimed water rights would either be in Canyon Ferry Reservoir. So we would pipe water back upstream from Canyon Ferry, or it would be over the Bozeman Pass from the Yellowstone River. So at some point, the voters of Gallatin County or the city of Bozeman or whomever may be faced with the question about whether it's worth our tax dollars to do something like that. But yes, water is a limiting factor. We live in the desert, and I think a lot of folks forget that. Part of living in the desert is being really responsible and thoughtful about future water supply infrastructure and how we manage water in a thoughtful way. And as somebody who lives in the city of Bozeman, I think about this often. As an urban water consumer, how can I be a partner to farmers and ranchers in conserving our precious water resources? Thank you.
Okay. Carter?
Yeah. Zach, that was really good. I was just looking at water is going to be extremely important here in the valley. Without water, we cannot have density. We cannot have the growth that we're experiencing right now. I know that I was looking at the master plan in Belgrade for their water management. They are aggressively doing public improvement projects to accommodate their demand for water for their housing and their commercial developments that they have. They have a lot of developments that they have planned on. And I was just reviewing the Belgrade 2019 growth policy, and they have a lot of things that will require water. That just brings up the other issue that we have to work so closely with them as far as what we are doing as a county and what Belgrade City is doing. Manhattan, they work off just a couple of wells in a spring. So their growth is increasing also, and they're going to need water. So we definitely, as Zach said, we're going to have to learn to find water from somewhere else. Either pay for it, or we may even put maybe a moratorium on the square foot of homes that end up being built here. I don't know. Just a thought, but something definitely needs to be done for us to continue the growth that we do have, and we much needed growth.
Look at you.
Okay. This is for the PSC. Is it possible for the legislature and the PSC to work collaboratively or collectively on energy issues to benefit energy consumers and energy producers? If so, in what ways could that occur? Who's first?
Jim, you want to flip a coin on this one?
Who wants to answer first?
Tom. Tom's going first.
Tom's going first? Okay, go.
That is yes. The legislature and the Public Service Commission can work collaboratively, and I can say that with certainty because I've been a legislator and I have worked with commissioners on the Public Service Commission. I worked very closely with Travis Cavula. He's a Republican. Great Public Service Commissioner. Knew the issues inside and out. We worked together in repealing the outage tracker, which was a terrible piece of legislation that was still in place. I'm not going to go into the details of that. It's really in the weeds. But he and I worked very closely to repeal that. We also worked together to attempt to repeal the tax tracker. I worked with Roger Koopman and Randy Pinocchi, both Republicans, to try to take things out of code that benefit the monopolies at the expense of ratepayers. I've done that for the last four terms. I've done that for the last 8 years. And probably the most important thing that the legislature and the Public Service Commission can work together on is to deal with the bizarre way that we compensate Northwestern Energy. We currently pay Northwestern Energy what's called a return on equity, a percentage of the value of what they own. We pay them that amount every year. So what does that mean? Well, if I told you I'm going to pay you 10 to 12% on the value of the home that you're going to buy, what are you going to own? What are you going to buy? The most expensive home that you can. Return on equity is a problem, and we need to work together on that.
James?
Short answer is yes. I think the goal of the PSE and the Montana legislature is obviously to do what's right for Montana and Montanans. And so where there are areas of common ground and interest, then yes, the legislature and the PSG should work hand to hand. One of the areas that I would like to see some reform in the legislative side is the repeal of the pre-approval process for Northwest Energy. This is a creature that was set up by the legislature when Northwest Energy came out of bankruptcy in the middle 2000s that basically allows them to get pre-approval from the PSC for purchasing assets and that sort of thing. I think it's problematic for the ratepayer in that it sort of excludes the full panoply of discovery and citizen participation in the rate approval process. One of the areas where I thought the PSC and the legislature worked very well, during the last legislature was in shooting down Northwest Energy's attempt to basically bypass the PSC and get approval for the purchase of the additional shares in Colstrip. And I'm glad that that bill failed. And I'm pleased that every member of the PSC, I think, opposed that legislation. Maybe not every.
Okay, thank you. I want to remind the viewers to type in your questions, please, as opposed to raising your hand. We aren't taking any live questions. We're just doing it by hit the Q&A button. Okay, this is for the City Commission. The County Commission. What actions would you take to improve working relationships between the county and cities within the county? Who would like to go first?
Carter, do you want to start?
Oh, okay, I'll take a stab at it. That's definitely one of the things as county commissioners that I plan on making paramount. I mean, we have to champion communication between the city and the county. Otherwise, things are going to overlap. We've had situations where in a subdivision, a street was part county, part city, and it ended up being a debacle on who was going to maintain it and things like that. So as far as we have to work on being transparent, we're already hosting all our meetings online. There are an open forum that you can come and view the meetings. I think we have to, as commissioners, we have to default over communicate on what our intentions are, what information we have. If we have information about a subdivision or some planning or some zoning that we have, then we need to make sure that the other entities, communities know about it so we can work together, because without that interfacing, we're going to run into some problems. We are going to have some serious problems. Our growth is too large to not be on the same page with the other communities. How to do that? We just have to work harder with communicating with what's happening at our meetings.
Hey, Zach?
Great. Yeah, I think this is a really important point. At the end of the day, taxpayers lose when two different taxing jurisdictions or local governments are suing each other. That's a status quo that is not acceptable, and we have to do better. County government's part to play, and that's the position we are running for, I'm running for. We need to be more communicative, available, and assertive partners in conversations about conflict resolution planning and deploying our assets and resources and staff. We also have an important role to play in setting an example for county and city employees about how to treat each other well, how to communicate respectfully, how to work through complicated, controversial topics in a meaningful and respectful way. My background, I think, uniquely positions me to kind of transcend the rural-urban divide. Literally, the mission statement of the nonprofit that I worked for, One Montana, for 6 years, was to bridge the rural-urban divide in Montana. In the legislature, I have done that. I passed 21 bills as a legislator over 3 sessions as a member of the minority party. I did that by talking about common values, building relationships across the aisle, and working really, really, really hard to problem solve on complicated issues by talking to people that I don't necessarily agree with ideologically. We have to do more of that. We have to do it all much better.
Okay. And here's one for James Brown, but I assume both of you will answer this. Do you support Northwest Energy investing in burning more coal?
So thank you for targeting that question to me.
That wasn't my target. That was how the question came.
I don't know how you answer that logically, because the reality is Northwest Energy owns a certain stake in Colstrip. Okay. So necessarily the question goes to whether or not Northwest Energy should have an interest in Colstrip and use the power generated by Colstrip. Well, that's a decision that's made by the utility. That's not a decision that's made by the Public Service Commission. For the long term, that's going to be a decision that's made. Really, the use of coal as a source of power is really going to be made by the markets. In recent years, you've seen the growth of renewable energy development. And the reason that is not necessarily because of the incentives that have been provided to promote that form of energy, but because alternative power producers have become better and more efficient and more profitable with what they do. The market's going to determine whether or not Northwest Energy continues to use coal as a base power. It's really not the PSC's call. And I think it's almost an inappropriate question, Austin.
Okay. Tom?
Please restate the question. I'm trying to figure out why it would be an inappropriate question.
The question was... Oh, I don't know that I have it anymore.
I got it. Just a second.
Just a sec. And I'll get it for you.
Do you support Northwestern Energy investing in burning more coal?
Did you hear it?
I did hear that.
Okay.
The answer to that is no. I do not support, as a public service commissioner, as a citizen, as a legislator, as someone who understands economics, I do not support Northwestern Energy purchasing more assets to burn coal. And here's why. As Mr. Brown points out, we have to consider economics. This is a graph of how Northwestern Energy currently generates and charges for power. This red bar here, this is coal burning, Colstrip. It's the most expensive way we have of producing power. QF4, this is a waste coal burning facility. It's expensive. And we also have QF1, which is a petroleum coke burning facility. It's less expensive, but still expensive. Burning coal is, as Mr. Brown points out or kind of glances off us, burning coal is the most expensive way we have of producing power right now. If we go with less expensive ways of getting power, Judith Cap, wind power, spot market, just buying it off of the Western grid, it's less expensive than producing power by burning coal. So for that reason, no, it would be a poor decision to support, to produce power by burning more coal.
Okay, thank you. And here's a question for the County Commission. County Commission candidates, how will you support our vulnerable populations, particularly those living on the margins and our homeless community?
Happy to jump in. Yeah, I think this is a really important thought. Again, as we're preparing for the future, Gallatin Valley and Gallatin County is blessed with a tremendous amount of prosperity. I believe one statistic that jumps out at me from this last summer is that in 2 months over the summer, over $1 billion in real estate changed hands in just the community of Big Sky. So we are growing quickly. There are more jobs here than other corners of Montana. And I have been made acutely aware as a legislator representing Gallatin Valley that we are blessed by our prosperity challenges. That being said, we have to remember that this community isn't working for everyone, that there are folks who are struggling with affordability, that don't have access to basic services, that can't afford rent, or certainly that don't have the ability to purchase a home because of rising home costs. So we have to think about how to incorporate people who are experiencing poverty into all the decisions that are coming before local and county and city governments as we prepare for the future. And I'm particularly excited, if I'm elected, to bring the perspective of somebody who's working for HRDC at the moment, serving our housing and food insecure neighbors. How do we bring those perspectives into the decision-making process? How do we first acknowledge the fact that this community isn't working for everyone? And how do we ultimately create a future for Gallatin County that is more accessible and available and equitable for people that weren't born into wealth?
Thank you. Carter?
Yes. The mental health issues is something, another concern that I'm pretty passionate about here in Gallatin County. I know that Montana has the highest rate of suicide in the country, and I would like to tackle that and to see what the roots are causing that. With more growth, we have more taxes. It's kind of bittersweet. You know, we have a lot of money to do a lot of good things with, and I would like to really look at the budget and what we're dealing with as county commissioners and see how we can help the homeless communities. I know some of the homeless people, actually, and I've talked to some of them, and it seems like they're doing quite well, and in some cases choose to live the existence that they live in. However, they stated in wintertime it does get difficult for them. So there's a large population that's with needs that are not getting met, and they have some coping strategies that they have that we can help with as county commissioners.
Okay.
Interesting.
And again, I love these questions that you're sending in, people, because it seems like they come one for the PSC and then one for the county commissioners. This one is for the PSC. Do you think it would be good to facilitate and promote decentralized clean energy production and distribution? Everybody get the question? Who's answering first? James or Tom?
It dropped out for me there. Could you repeat the question, please?
Oh, sure. Hold on a sec. Do you think it would be good to facilitate and promote decentralized clean energy production and distribution?
Okay, if I understand the question properly, should we facilitate decentralizing the grid? And that is, should we have generation and distribution less centralized than we do now? And the answer to that is, I think, yeah, that is a smart way to go, both in terms of economics and in terms of security. You know, currently we are we're more susceptible to prolonged outages by having a centralized generation, whereas if we had more people producing their own power through solar or wind and we had storage throughout the state, we would be less prone to both natural disaster and terrorist attack. So, yeah, decentralizing generation and distribution is smart. Does the PSC do that? We can promote that, but that's not the decision that the Public Service Commission makes. But we can promote it. Thank you for the question.
Okay, and James is going to be next, but then Carter, I understand you want to answer the question as well. And so, Zach, if you want to speak to it, that's fine. But next we'll do James.
Go ahead, thank James. You. Well, this is a good question because it brings up one of the points I wanted to raise tonight about my opponent, Tom Woods, and what I believe are the poor decisions he made during his time as a Montana legislature. In the 2019 session, Tom Woods incredibly sponsored a bill, House Bill 438, that would have deregulated two big power generators in Montana, MDU, Northwest Energy. This is an incredible bill and speaks to Tom's lack of understanding of how Montana's history and where Montana's future is headed. For those that were around, in 1997, the Montana legislature, with the approval of a Democratic-led Public Service Commission, deregulated Montana Power Company. That led to sky-high power bills. It led to the loss of many jobs, particularly in Deer Lodge and Silver Bow counties. It led to the loss of pensions. It led to the loss of money invested in the stock market for many Montanans. Every single issue that the PSC is dealing with in 2020 is essentially related to the deregulation of Montana power. When my opponent's bill came before the legislature, there was over an hour of testimony opposing that, including from unions, the AARP, and environmental groups. If that's what it means by centralized deregulation or splitting it up, I am strongly opposed. Thank you.
Okay, Carter?
Could you, just for clarity, could you repeat the question, please, Sally?
Sure. Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. I don't have it up. Hold on a minute. Sorry. Hang on. It fell off my screen. It's coming.
Do you think it would be good to facilitate and promote decentralized clean energy production and distribution?
You know, I'm going to have to say I'm not current on those issues, and I don't want to make a statement right now. I'll just have to say I'm not that current right now with that issues to make a statement.
Okay. Zach, do you want to say something about that? That's because you just went to get dinner. Okay, let's get up a new question. Hold on a minute. As a county commissioner, would you support or oppose allowing zoning for tiny housing communities in Gallatin County? County Commission people?
Yeah, I'll take a swing at that. Also, Sally, thanks for calling me out when I took a bite of my dinner.
to be clear, sorry, I didn't mean to shame you. This shouldn't be shaming a bit.
No, so this is it's an interesting journey that I've been on as a legislator. I did introduce legislation as a legislator last session in 2019 to try and give local governments a more clear path forward on how to deal with tiny homes as a tool to quickly growing communities who want to provide a more affordable entryway into the housing market, who want to provide better alternatives for people who are facing housing insecurity. A lot of places after natural disasters, for example, catastrophic wildfires, have created tiny home villages as a temporary emergency housing alternative for people that lost their homes. Communities also use these as transitional housing for people that are chronically homeless, getting a roof over someone's head who's dealing with chronic mental health issues and has lived most of their life on the street. It can be a really important stepping stone to helping them basically normalize and receive better services and stabilize their life. So yeah, tiny homes need to be and generally more creative smaller, more affordable type entryway or gateway housing opportunities have to be part of our future in Gallatin County and in communities across the West that are facing affordable housing challenges.
Okay. Carter? 96.
Well, again, I believe we're going to have to lean into the community. I mean, if it was my property and I saw somebody, a tiny home neighborhood coming up next to me, I might want to look into some of the issues involved. I'm definitely a libertarian at heart and a constitutionalist, and I believe in private property rights. But I think as county commissioners, we need to look at the whole situation and see what fits and what interfaces and what goes with the current community. So as far as zoning goes on these, it's a recent phenomena. So I'd have to do more research, maybe look into what other communities have done with that. So I can't say I could be emphatic on what on a statement right now, but that's an interesting question, and I would like to look into that more because I would like to live in a tiny home someday in my future. But I don't know if it'll be Gallatin County, but maybe. So it definitely zoning will have to play a part in whether tiny housing would be allowed or not.
Okay, here's a question for the PSC, but perhaps the county commission candidates would want to answer it as well. Do you believe in climate change, and how would that influence your decisions?
I'll go first on this one.
Okay.
The answer is yes. I do believe in climate change. Frankly, if you look at the history of Montana, you'll know that the climate always changes. We used to be under ice. We used to be heavily forested in a swamp. We used to have a thing called Lake Missoula. But yes, climate change is real. The question becomes, what role does the PSC play in combating climate change? This is a distinction you're going to hear over and over again tonight, I believe, between me and my opponent. I'm a firm believer as an attorney that when you serve in a capacity like the PSC, which is a quasi-judicial body, what that means is you are required by law to be a neutral party and to apply the law and regulation as given to you and to be fair to all parties. Your job as a commissioner is not to be a legislator or to do agendas or to try to change how policies work or how companies work. I don't believe that the PSC is in any position, legally or regulatory, to be active on trying to fight climate change. My philosophy as a PSC commissioner will be to apply the law and regulation as written.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, I teach science. Climate change is real because we can't break the laws of physics. Certain molecular bonds absorb energy differently. You put those carbon dioxide and methane molecules in the air and they absorb energy differently. Can't argue that. But I like to make my arguments about economics. This facility here, Colstrip, this facility here, and this facility here, some of the most expensive generation we have are responsible for 50% of our carbon footprint. So I don't need to make arguments about climate change. It's economics. And now I would like to respond to my opponent on his misrepresentation of House Bill 438. House Bill 438 did not deregulate the energy industry. House Bill 438 sought to give the power to the Public Service Commission, the ability to break a monopoly into generation and distribution. That's what it sought to do. Not all of them, but if the Public Service Commission felt that a monopoly wasn't behaving well, that it could break them into generation and distribution and have them compete on the open market. That's not the same thing as the original deregulation bill. My opponent knows that. He knows that, but he chooses to distort the truth. He can't tell the truth about himself. I don't expect him to tell the truth about my record, but there you have it.
Okay. Can I remind everybody that this is a forum, not a debate? Just saying. And Carter, do you want to respond to the climate change question and or Zach?
Yeah. You know, God has called us to be good stewards of this planet. You know, coming from California, where we had smog, I would wipe my forehead with the sleeve of my arm and it would be brown right here. And the majority of it was manufacturing. I'm definitely want to look into emissions control for Bozeman area. Since 2008, there has been a 16% increase in emissions here. And I think it's definitely something we want to look at. And it would just see what comes, and I would take a serious look at it.
Okay, Zach?
Yeah, I think it's something that I studied in college, and it's an issue that I'm quite passionate about. I think it's also worth saying, part of my professional work at One Montana, I was facilitating public forums across Montana on the Montana Climate Assessment, and that was specifically for the agricultural chapter. And it's important to note that farmers and ranchers are more concerned about climate change than most of us are, because they're experiencing these changes firsthand and are more tuned in to seasonal weather patterns and precip patterns than most of us, because it equals their livelihood. So in terms of county commission, how does this come into play? I think two things I'll point at. There are many other aspects of climate change, but and how it affects county government. But number one is, when we think about land use planning, many communities across the West have made a major mistake of allowing free-for-all laissez-faire development on the wildland-urban interface. And what that does is it allows people to dump their personal assets into a place that will ultimately be at risk. Climate change will cause more severe catastrophic wildfires, and then the public, the taxpayers, will have to essentially fight fires to bail these people out. And it's not these people's fault. It's not to be vindictive. It's just to say that's part of the planning conversation. We have to do better. Also, to be more resilient to climate change as we grow, we have to be better stewards of our water resources, care for our rivers and our wetlands. And that comes into land use planning decisions every day and every week in the county commission.
Thanks. Okay, this is a question for county commission. Bozeman has hired staff tasked with increasing availability of affordable housing. The county has no such staffing. How can county government work effectively with Bozeman on this issue? Who would like to be first?
Sally, if I may, the question was stated, how can the county address staffing housing issues? Is that
Let me read it again, Carter. Bozeman has hired staff whose task is to increase availability of affordable housing. The county has no such staffing. How can the county government work effectively with Bozeman on this issue?
To work effectively to provide affordable housing for staff? Yeah. Is that one?
No, not for staff, for people. I think the question means the city has staff that is works on affordable housing. The county does not. So how can the county government work effectively with Bozeman on this issue?
Okay. All right.
Who's taking that first?
Yeah, I'll dive in. I think generally speaking, yes, the county has to be a more proactive player in helping to address cost of living questions and affordability. I don't know if that means creating staff people. That's a question that, if I'm elected, will become top of mind when we're going through the budgeting process and thinking about priorities and how to most effectively and responsibly deploy resources that are your tax dollars. But certainly the county needs to be a more active partner in facilitating and creating affordable housing outcomes in this county. We have plenty of $1 million condos in Bozeman. We don't need to incentivize any more of those types of developments. We need to think about how we work with the private sector to achieve outcomes that meet the needs of your working Joe and Jane, who are struggling to make it, candidly, in Gallatin County's economy and cost of living situation. So I don't know exactly what that looks like, but yes, Gallatin County must be a more active partner in providing affordable housing opportunities.
Carter?
Yes, affordable housing is definitely an issue. It's not always the government responsibility. It's personal responsibility sometimes. Maybe it's unfortunate we have live in a society that's so expensive. I come from a city in California, Santa Barbara, that was extremely expensive to live there. In fact, the workers for the city could not afford housing there. So what the city did was lower interest rate loans for city employees so that they could afford a house and they could have a family and they could live in a town where they were raised in because they were getting priced out. So it's definitely an issue that we have to address here in Gallatin County. I know they did it in Big Sky with the new subdivision going on behind the Conoco and the quarry. Are you guys familiar with that? It's a low housing, and they've also done some up by the village. There's some low-income housing. They've done a fantastic job of creating that. So it's definitely maybe tiny homes. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know. But we definitely have to look at that in Gallatin County. And as far as what I would do to procure that, I don't know at this point. But there are many things I don't know. I don't claim to have a silver bullet to everything, but I'd love to look into these issues and especially issues that are needed like affordable housing and see how I can better make a fitment with the county and the city.
Okay. This is a question for all the candidates. I think it's an interesting one. If you are elected to office and serve out your term, what do you hope your legacy will be? And that's for all four of you. Who wants to go first? Not easy.
So I'll step up, Sally. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, James.
So I'm running for the Public Service Commission because as a lifelong Montanan, I love this state and I want to do what's best for the people of Montana. Montana's been very good to my family. We've been here since the 1880s. We've made a living here. We've prospered here. We continue to do business here. Montana's given us everything. One of the reasons that I'm running for the Public Service Commission is I'm very disappointed in how the conduct of the Public Service Commission has gone for the last several years. The infighting, the backbiting, the sneaking around has harmed the very important mission of the Public Service Commission, which is essentially to protect the ratepayer while making sure that we have a safe, reliable, and affordable utilities and utility services. I'm very disappointed in what I've heard tonight. I've been attacked twice now for being a liar by my opponent. One of the things that I hope will be my legacy is to stop this kind of personal attacks on people that you disagree with and to focus on what we can accomplish as public servants. And as public service commissioner, my hope is to bring the balance that is required of the PSC, which is basically to put the ratepayer in the front of our minds. But when doing our job right as a PSC commissioner, is to ensure our approach to regulation and policy benefits everybody. My legacy, I hope, will be to restore credibility to the commission.
Okay, Tom?
I'll go ahead and step up and go next. And let's focus on where Mr. Brown and I agree. What I want my legacy to be is that the Public Service Commission returns to be a functioning governmental entity, because currently, as my opponent points out, it is not. It's been in the news for all the wrong reasons: a lack of transparency, a lack of commissioners showing up for work, a lack of commissioners reading the cases that they're deciding on. It's got to change. And I want to return the Public Service Commission to its mission of providing a balance between the needs to keep these monopolies in business and our needs as consumers to pay a fair rate. So, I'm sorry that my opponent feels that he's been attacked. However, I'm calling him on his own actions. We both agree on a number of things, and let's continue to agree that we need the Public Service Commission to be better than it is right now. We need to do away with the pre-approval process. I agree with you completely. It has not served the public. And we both agree that the Colstrip bill that came in the last legislature was a terrible deal. I brought House Bill 438 to combat that. I took action. Thank you.
Okay. Carter, Zach, who would like to answer that next? Legacy.
I'll go. I think the legacy for me would be if I were to finish the 6 years, would be that I did everything I could. I worked really, really hard. I got out into the community and I sought their opinions. I focused on a vision where it was amicable for most people in the Gallatin County involved. I would like to finish with the accolades that I had the highest of ethical behavior while I was in office. I would also like to be able to tell my daughter that I did the best I could and I worked the hardest I could for Gallatin County while I was commissioner.
Okay. Zach?
Yeah, thanks. Three things come to mind. Number one is being a good partner to agriculture is part of the legacy that I would want to have. I think it's such a common ground issue between rural and urban Gallatin County residents. Agriculture is the history and lifeblood of our culture, of our quality of life, of open spaces, of our ecosystem services that are part of what make this such a wonderful place to live. So I would want to be remembered as a city kid who showed up and listened to and supported agriculture at every turn. I've proven that in the legislature. I've been won awards from the Montana Farm Bureau as a legislator, and that's something I'm really proud of, and I would continue that perspective as a county commissioner. The second thing that comes to mind is I would want to be remembered as somebody who helped make county government a great place to work. I think it's easy to forget that Gallatin County employs almost 500 of our neighbors. It's a significant organization, and county commissioners have an incredibly important role to play in supporting staff as they're distributing and providing resources. And I would want to boost morale in the courthouse and make that a great place to show up and work. And number three, my siblings and I all grew up here, and we left for a period of time after we graduated from high school, and we all chose to come back because this is such a special place to be and live and work and play. And I hope that the actions that we all collectively take over the next 5, 10, 20 years create that future for the next generation so that my nieces and nephews and someday kids want to move back to Gallatin Valley and make it home.
Okay. This is for county commissioners. Do you think the county would benefit from impact fees? Who wants to take a stab at that?
The county would benefit from impact.
Zach, are you?
I'll take a short stab at it. They already have impact fees, from my understanding. I could be wrong, but definitely that's something I would like to look into, the impact fees, and see what they are, where they're going, and utilize those more carefully. Like I said earlier, I mean, there are a lot of developers coming into this town, and they're making a lot of money. And I would just like to see how much are they putting back into the community myself. I'm not privy to that information right now, but I sure would like to know, because there could be some areas in this county, in the city, that could use some of that, the support. So yes. Yeah. I'd like to look into that further.
Zach?
I think that's really interesting, Carter. I think I agree that that's a place we need to do more work. Impact fees are controversial. If you're in the building community or in the real estate community, impact fees are bad. They take a little chunk out of your profit margin and reinvest some of the portion of a sale into infrastructure related to the development. So many from those industries despise the idea of impact fees, and that's why Gallatin County doesn't require them. But what Carter said is so important. There are developers who are moving into this valley who are used to paying significant impact fees in other parts of the country, who get a free ride in Gallatin County. They are not investing in infrastructure in the same way that they are in other places. And we need to take a deep, hard internal look at that question. At the end of the day, if there are no impact fees, those basic necessities related to stormwater, water treatment and supply, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, street infrastructure, somebody has to pay for that at some point. If there are no impact fees, the people who move into those developments end up paying those costs later on anyway at some point, typically. So we do have to have some hard conversations about impact fees. And I don't want to be an antagonist to the realtors or the development community by any matter of means. I want to be a partner. But we need to have some hard conversations about impact fees in county government.
Okay. Question for the PSC folks. Why are so many districts needed in Montana for public service? Why can't one statewide commission serve?
I'll take that first. We don't need five. I think we could do the same job with three. I would hesitate to give that decision making to one person. I think that's too much concentration of power. Could we do it with three? Yeah, I think we could.
Okay, James.
You know, this is an interesting question. In preparing for tonight's debate, I kind of went back and through the midst of time and kind of looked at how the PSC was organized and came to be a five-member body. Interestingly enough, in the middle 70s, there was actually a bill introduced in the Montana legislature that would have reduced the number of PSC commissioners from five to three and would have made the commission appointed instead of elected. That bill did not pass, and here we are in 2020 having the same conversation. I think to answer the thrust of the question, the idea for the districts, I believe, was to ensure that there was proportional representation on the PSC so that, you know, every portion of the state is represented by somebody who is dedicated to knowing their issues and the issues that are particular to the PSC for that district. The reality is, though, as Tom and I certainly agree on, the PSC is really not a partisan race, and it's not a partisan body. It's really just a regulatory mission. It's very curious to me, frankly, that this is a partisan race because the mission isn't partisan. But that's the choice that's been made. If the legislature decides to narrow this down to three appointed commissioners who don't represent a district, well, that's a call for the legislature.
Okay. For the county commission, would you support zoning to make it easy to build accessory dwelling units and co-housing? Want me to say it again?
No, I got you. I think, number one, I'll say the extent to which accessory dwelling units and multi-unit housing and how much that fits within county land use planning decisions, I'm not 100% sure on. Typically, the ADU fight comes up in front of city councils in more densely populated neighborhoods. But I'll just say that my history with that issue, when I was student body president at the University of Montana, James, I was supposed to not mention that university, but here we are. That's my alma mater as well, even though I represent MSU in the legislature. In Missoula, ADUs were a very hot topic in front of the city council when I lived there, because neighbors wanted to, they didn't want more density. They wanted to preserve what they had. And from a student perspective, ADUs were a really important tool to provide the free market, frankly, to provide more housing opportunities for renters. In Bozeman and Missoula, two of our largest college towns, our vacancy rate for rental units is essentially zero, meaning there isn't marginally or statistically significant available housing supply for renters. So we do have to look at all kinds of policies. ADUs and multi-unit family housing policies might be part of those solutions and conversations, but we generally have to provide more tools to provide renters with options, working families with options, and people that generally can't afford to buy acres or expensive homes within our municipalities.
Okay, Carter?
Yeah, I would echo the sentiments of what Zach said. You know, as county commissioners, we enforce the state regulations, the state laws, and the current zoning for the area. So again, although I may have an opinion on that, there would probably be an overarching guideline to that we could draw upon depending on what area they plan on going into. I know they try in my neighborhood, in the Figgins neighborhood, they tried to rezone and put density behind us, and we came out against it because they were trying to change the zoning for that. And we came out against it and we won, and they were not able to change the zoning. So I know that if the community knows about it, if they're aware of the situation, we give them opportunity to express their opinions about it, then we're going to do what's best for the community.
Okay. And here's a question for the PSC. While coal is Montana's most expensive energy source, renewable energy sources cannot meet the energy demands of Montanans at this time. How can the PSC address the economics of energy supply and demand most effectively in its regulatory role? You want me to say that again, guys? You okay, James, yes, with that? Okay, who wants to be first?
I'll go ahead because I heard the question properly. So the utility, Northwestern has effectively killed a lot of renewable projects by making the argument that, look, the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow, we need power all the time. And the term that's used there is dispatchable. Solar energy is not dispatchable. Wind energy is not dispatchable. The workaround to that is storage, to store energy. And there's a number of different ways to do that. You can do that with batteries, and you can also do that with what's called kinetic batteries, or having water that's uphill, running it through a pipeline, through a generator at times when you need power. Then when the sun shines and the wind is blowing, you pump the water back up into the upper reservoir. It's something that's been done for decades. And Pennsylvania has some really big pump storage facilities. That's really our future. That if we, instead of just having solar and wind bid on power by themselves, to allow solar and wind to bid on power with storage to provide, that takes care of that dispatchability problem. So there is a future of less expensive, cleaner power. And that's the way I see this state going. We need to be able to be a clean energy exporter. Thank you. Great question.
James?
Do you
want to... So I'm going to answer the question more directly. So what most Montanans may not understand is that actually Montana is a leader in green energy production. It's a fact. It's a reality. And the reason that is because of the power that's generated through hydroelectricity. Plus, we have a growing number of alternative energy production sites around the state, for example, due to the gap. Okay. The question goes to, I believe, what the PSC can do to promote more green energy, as I understood the question. Okay. And again, this is a philosophical difference between me and my opponent. The PSC is a regulatory body that is judicial in nature. So basically its design is to play the role of a judge and decide cases that come before. It is not a policy-making body. It is not designed to promote one form of energy or over another. The reality is, as a Republican, I believe in having the markets dictate where energy will come from and where it will be produced. The reality is we're seeing in Montana is that we are moving away from coal-based production and we are moving towards more green-based production. And the reason that is because the markets are demanding. The PSC just needs to step aside and let that happen. All we need to do as PSC commissioners is to regulate utilities in a manner that allows them to do well while protecting taxpayer. The market will take care of itself, and the market is already trending towards green energy.
Okay. Question for the county commissioners. Should the county commission be expanded to more than three commissioners? What do you think, gentlemen?
I haven't thought about that, candidly, Sally. I will say one thing that our race represents that is interesting from a representation point of view. A resident of the city of Bozeman hasn't served on the county commission since the mid-90s. And I think that since Carter and I both live within the city limits, that will be a good thing for all of us. So in terms of representing city of Bozeman taxpayers who still pay for county services, pay county taxes, whether going beyond that point, whether we should expand the commission to be larger, I'm not sure. Certainly, the duties associated with county government are only getting bigger and more complex as our communities grow. So I'm certainly open to that conversation, but I haven't thought about the details, so don't have a real clear answer for you.
Okay. Carter?
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought about that too. As I investigated what the county commissioner does, it's like, there is so much, and there's just three of us. Other counties half our size, what, Park County? How many do they have? Three? And we're much larger than they are. And I would advocate for two more also, because I believe that with the growth and what we have here in Gallatin County, we're going to need more brain power to figure this out, because there's a lot coming. There's a lot of people coming, a lot of developers, and we have to keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening. I mean, it could really go wrong if we go in a direction that's not the right direction for Gallatin County. So, I'd like to hear the specifics on it, what it would actually take for us to have two more. So, yeah.
Okay, and a question for everybody. Do you support in any way defunding the police?
I'll take that one. Absolutely not. I believe in the rule of law. I believe that those who serve us in uniform deserve the utmost respect, because it is one of the most difficult jobs you can ever perform. It really is service over self for those that serve in blue. I absolutely, unequivocally, 100% oppose defunding the police. Point made.
Okay. Next.
Sure, I'll take that. The statement of defunding the police is really, it's a kind of a silly thing to say. We can't operate a society without a police department. We can't do that. I think what really the statement should be is that, look, our budget needs to reflect our priorities. And we are not currently, and I see this as being a source of frustration for a lot of people. We don't spend enough on mental health. We don't. And we're having increasing problems with that. So should we spend more on things that our culture needs wisely? Yeah. Does that mean that we have to reduce the police budget to zero? No, that's not good policy.
Zach, Carter?
Sure, I'll jump in. I'll have to think about later what defunding the police has to do with the job of public service commissioners, but that said, I think it does have a lot to do with running county government, because the Office of the Sheriff is a partner to county government and a part of county government. To be very clear, the sheriff is an elected official who does not answer to the county commission. The county commission works in tandem with the elected sheriff to make mutual decisions about how the Office of the Sheriff deploys resources and positions itself. But ultimately, the sheriff is the boss of the Office of the Sheriff and all the sheriff's deputies. And a good county commissioner realizes that and respects that. And the way I'm thinking about all the conversations we're having around law enforcement in this state have nothing to do with defunding the police. In fact, it's how do we reinvest in better services that reduce conflict. And so that's mental health services, which is a shared principle that I've heard my opponent talk about. Tom just mentioned it. The model we created in the 90s during the Roscoe administration were crisis intervention teams. They brought social workers together with addiction and mental health professionals with law enforcement to respond to really challenging crisis situations in people's homes. Guess what? That model requires a lot of money. So the idea that defunding the police or that defunding mantra will somehow get us the results that we're seeking as a society, no. But we can also be thoughtful partners to our marginalized, underrepresented neighbors and their constituencies. So
time up,
simplified answer to a simplified question.
Okay, Carter, you're up.
Again, being county commissioner, we definitely are involved with the sheriff's department. In fact, I think we just put on six more sheriffs, more sheriffs. So as far as that's concerned, we don't deal with the police right now, but the sheriff's department, we definitely do. I believe that protecting citizens is the priority of the government. So how we do that is part of the county commissioner's position. So I would not advocate defunding the police in any way, shape, or form. I think they do an amazing job. I think we're under-policed in this town. No, I would not defund police.
Okay, and here's the last question for all of you. And then we'll do the closing statements. We are in the middle of a number of crises in our country, public health, climate, racial justice crises. How has the national context of this year changed how you are approaching this job? Whatever your job is. Do you want me to read it again, or is that good? Gentlemen, are you okay? Okay, who's first?
I'll jump in. I think it's an amazing question that's so important. The COVID-19 pandemic has changed how we're all thinking about campaigning, just to be selfish and personal in the context of politics. We've all had to show up in our communities differently. I've been on Zoom today since 4:30, so I'm on 4 hours this evening after work hours of being on Zoom, trying to show up and talk to people and have tough conversations. Thinking about county government, how many of our neighbors had never heard of the county health department before March? And now it is perhaps the most important and visible aspect of government across the country. So this crisis doubles down on the idea that good government is so important. We rely on thoughtful leadership and functional local and state governments to ultimately manage and deploy our tax dollars in an effective way to provide services that make this the greatest country on earth. And so this makes me think about good government. This makes me think about how to show up differently and in unique ways to listen to the people that I ultimately want to work for. And in terms of the racial justice and defunding the police and those questions, we have to have more nuanced, difficult conversations in a respectful way. Our country is really suffering because we have lost our ability to do that. That's something that I bring to public service, I want to bring to the county commission, and I want to bring to our communities. We can do better at having tough conversations across cultural and partisan divides, and I think I'm able to do that. Thanks.
Okay. Who would like to take that?
I'll go ahead. Oh, darn. Are you still with
me? Yep. Go ahead.
I lost your video here, which kind of segues nicely into what I want to talk about. And your question is, how has this changed the way that I think about my job? I serve on the education committee as well. And throughout this COVID issue, I've had to completely change the way I teach. You know, I've gone completely online in teaching physics to college students. My kids are almost completely online, and they were last spring. And what this has pointed out to me is that broadband and internet access is so much more important than it used to be. I mean, it's the running water of 1920s. And so we need to approach it as something that is more than just something that people want to watch movies on or play games on. It's the foundation of business. It's the foundation now of education. And so it's refocused my attention span on, we need better broadband access across this state, because I've heard from constituents across the state who, because they don't have broadband access, they drive their kids to the school, park in the parking lot so that the kids can do their homework assignments. That's not okay. That's not fair. That's not the Montana that I want. And so I seek a new partnership with the industries to figure out, how can we do this? How can we do this better?
Hey, who would like to be next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
The COVID-19 has been quite a challenge, especially running a campaign, and everything seems to be culminating right now with the election and so many things. But, I believe we have to balance constitutional rights with good decisions affecting the health of, Americans. I believe we have to distinguish between forensic science and agenda science. I see a lot of information going out there now. And if we look pre-COVID to what the mask does and what it prevents, and I think we'd get a better pulse on what actually is should be made a mandate and should not be made a mandate. For me, I mean, I'll fight for our unalienable rights but our freedom of liberty and our ability to make choices. But I understand that it's a fine line of public health and our public freedom. So, as the county commissioner, we may serve on the board of health. We have to answer to the board of health. So what they tell us, we kind of like put out there. So, we have one vote on the board of health. So that's all we can do, when it comes down to making those decisions right now. So as far as the county commissioner is concerned, we have the Board of Health to help us make decisions, and we can move forward with that.
Okay. And James?
So I believe the question was, how are the events of 2020 impacting how we're approaching our respective positions, as I understood the question?
I think so.
And I'll answer that in a bifurcated way. The first is, in terms of energy regulation, it hasn't changed much in how I've approached my view and philosophy of the PSC and how it addresses energy regulation. Energy regulation in Montana is more informed by our past than it is necessarily current events that are going on now. And as I talked about, everything the PSC does in terms of energy flows from the fact that the deregulation bill of 1997 has caused it's like a cascading effect. Like every decision that PSC is making in terms of Colstrip and integrated utilities and green power all flows from that 1997 decision. So there's no change there. I do agree with Tom that in terms of what the PSC regulates, PSC regulates telecommunications to an extent in Montana. Most of that area has been co-opted by the federal government, but there's still some legacy telephone systems in Montana, for example, Three Rivers Telephone, right? I can remember when you had the old party lines out in the rural country, right, where everybody could listen to your conversations. We need to focus more, as Tom said, on overcoming the obstacles to geographic distance in Montana to deliver educational options, healthcare, economic opportunities, and releasing the productive capacity of Montanans to reach the world. Nowhere is that more focused than Gallatin County, which is exploding economically because of the ability to access the world from where people sit in their homes. Gallatin County is the model for Montana.
Thank you. And now, closing. Everybody gets 2 minutes, and we're going to start with Zach.
Thank you, Sally, and thanks, everyone, for your time tonight. And for my opponent, thanks for being a great, thoughtful opponent and for your thoughtful approach to running for this position. I wrote a prepared statement, and I'm going to go off script because that last question made me think about some things a little differently. How has the last 9 months changed my perspective for this job? And I think that the amazing opportunity and privilege that I've had since our pandemic began last spring has been to work in a service position in one of my multiple jobs, serving our housing and food insecure neighbors. And that ability to serve is fundamental to how I think about public office, whether it's serving in the legislature or serving in the commission. And so I ultimately want to approach this job as a servant. One of my best friends in the legislature is a Republican, and his wife once said publicly that Zach has a servant's heart. And I learned that from my parents, who employed people in our community for over 35 years. I learned that from my brother, who owns a construction business here in the Valley that employs over 20 people. Every decision he makes, he's taking account 25 different lives and how his financial decisions impact his employees' financial futures and the like. And that ethic, thinking about others before self and putting yourself in a position to serve others, is how I would approach the job of county commission. I won't get it perfect. I don't know everything about every issue, but I will listen. And I sure as heck care about the future of our communities. And I'll dig in and spend my life energy investing in the future of our communities. And that's my promise, I guess. It's aspirational. It's not as specific as some might want. But I will work my tail off to leave this place better than I found it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Or Zach. Carter?
Yes. Well, I'd say as commissioner, I work extremely hard to retain traditional conservative values. As the Chronicle stated, the commission has been dominated by Republicans. As we see the growth and desire to be here, I believe it is a testimony that Republican values are doing a fantastic job. I am a limited government, low tax, constitutional conservative. I've been that way my entire life. My views and philosophy are shared by many in the Gallatin County. I will work with all parties, public, private, including health professionals, law enforcement, and judiciary support groups, and those affected to develop simultaneous strategies to address needs, resources, staffing, and the annual budget. Why do I want to be elected? First and foremost, our governance should be citizen-based and not a job for professional politicians. Elected office is not an entitlement and should not be a career. I'm not a politician. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I'm a provider. I have experience and hard work to bring to the table and will contribute to the solutions that the county faces. I have a deep respect for the position and what it entails. The position of county commissioner is a very important one. I have the responsibility to God, my family, my friends, my neighbors in the city and in the county to make the best informed decisions I possibly can. Because this is my community, I am passionate and very concerned over the issues I believe I can help with. I can promise hard work, a genuine desire to research issues. I will acquire knowledge of the county, and I promise ethical behavior. I have a deep respect for the position and what it entails. I believe my personality is one that can talk people off the ledge, so to speak. So when things get heated, which they can do often, I can bring the forum calmly back to the point. I am a communicator. I will gladly discuss issues openly so there is no confusion on the direction the commissioners are headed.
Okay, thank you. James? 2 minutes.
Thank you for hosting us tonight. I really appreciate it, Sally. It was a very good conversation. And thanks to my opponent, Tom Woods, for a good conversation. And Carter, Zach, thank you for joining us as well. Go Grizz, Zach. So, as I stated during this conversation, the PSC is not a partisan office. I didn't run for this office because I'm a Republican. I ran for this office because I'm a Montanan. I'm a fourth generation Montanan, and I felt called to run for this office because I believe I could do a good job for the people of the state of Montana. I have the skill set to succeed in this job, as I have discussed. I have been a private practice attorney for 16 years. I'm an employer. I've signed the front and back of paychecks. As an attorney, I've been involved in PSC matters and know the issues regulated by the commission and the work of the commission itself. And therefore, I will hit the ground running. As I told you, what I'm really running for is to restore faith in the commission and the work it performs on behalf of Montanans. As evidenced by recent events, the PSC needs to move away from focusing on personality conflicts and petty grievances and move towards, once again, being a body that promotes Montana first regulatory policies. I'm disappointed, again, in the fact that my opponent has attacked me again tonight. This has been a common theme in his campaign. And what it shows me, and I hope it shows the voter, is that Tom doesn't have the personality conflict to change the commission and its petty grievances. If you're going to attack me as in the campaign, then I can't imagine what he's going to do on the commission working with some of those that are causing problems. I will work to ensure the commission complies with its duties to have open government, open policy making, and not to do decision making behind closed doors. And I promise and I will work to ensure that Montana and ratepayers have what they deserve, which is to have a PSC that promotes Montana regulatory policies for the consumer that are affordable, reliable, and sustainable. Thank you for having me on tonight, Sally.
Okay. And Tom Woods, you get the last word.
Being married, I'm not used to having the last word. So it's... and one other point I'd like to make is that you guys in the county commission, you want two more commissioners. If I get elected, I can loan you two if you want them. But anyway, I believe really firmly that the government is supposed to be by people and for people. That's what drove me to become a legislator in the first place. And the Public Service Commission is my opponent stated is a quasi-judicial body. But that term quasi-judicial means it's not judge. It's not an impartial just applying the law. It's more nuanced than that. The Public Service Commission does indeed work with the legislature. That's the way it's been for quite some time. As a legislator, I have worked with public service commissioners to try to make things better. That's why I brought over 13 bills to try to make this process of regulating monopolies more fair. That's what I've done. I've walked the walk. As to working with other people across the aisle, look, I'm a Democrat. I've been in the minority for my entire political career, if you want to call it a political career. As a legislator, you make $11.66 an hour or so. It's service, not a career. The only way that you can pass any bills is to be able to work across the aisle. And I've done that in the legislature, and I want to bring that expertise to the Public Service Commission. Where Jim Brown and I agree is that, look, the Public Service Commission currently, it's a hot mess. We need people in there that are willing to do the job, willing to do the work, willing to address complex issues. That's what I like to do. That's what I've been doing as a public as a legislator. I look forward to serving you as a public service commissioner. Thank you to my opponent. Thank you to you folks who put this together. It was a pleasure.
Okay. And thank you again to all of you for participating. It's difficult with COVID. It's difficult on Zoom. I like it. I've done a lot of forums, and I sure like it when we have the audience right there to see us all and be with us. But it is what it is, and we make the best of it. I want to thank all the guests who listened to yet another 20 million hours of Zoom, right? And I want to thank the forum sponsors, the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, League of Women Voters, American Association of University Women, Belgrade, and Bozeman Libraries. I want to remind you that tomorrow's ballot issue forum is the last event in the series and will run at the same time, 6:30 to 8:30. Public can sign on to view it using the same Zoom link you used tonight. Check the forum schedule on the Facebook page for BPW, where you also see the links to the recordings from previous evenings. Tonight's video recording will be posted there as well. Reminder that absentee ballots were mailed out on October 9th. If you aren't registered to vote, you can do so by visiting the Secretary of State website. Voter registration closes on October 26th. Ballots can be completed and turned in via mail in person at a polling station or in person to the county courthouse on Election Day, November 3rd. And on Election Day, November 3rd, same day voter registration and in-person voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then guess what? The election is going to be over. And I can't imagine that there's one soul in the world who isn't wearied to death of the election. So thanks again to all of you for being with us. I appreciate it. It was
thank lovely. You too, Sally.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.